Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Hi, everybody. Jimmy DeYoung. I'm seated in Jerusalem, Israel, and we're going to be coming in as the sponsor of what needs to be a program that will assist you in understanding what's happening in the Jewish state of Israel, because being in Jerusalem, in the center of the city itself, helps us to have an understanding of what is indeed going on. We're in for Sam, Gary, and Dave. They're away from the broadcast today, but we have two outstanding guests that are going to join us here in our temporary studios in Jerusalem, Winky Madad and Maurice Hirsch. And they both have a very interesting background. Winky headed up the media watch for the State of Israel, for the Jewish newspapers, the electronic media, and the print media, etc. Maurice represents the Palestinian media, and palwatch.org is their location. And Winky, just get to the microphone, if you will, and share with us a bit of your background. Now, we've only got a 15-minute segment. I want to get to Maurice and some questions I want to ask as well.
Jimmy, I'll keep it short for the listeners. I've been in Israel since 1970. I worked for about 12 years in the Knesset as a parliamentary aide, primarily for a woman by the name of Geula Cohen, a member of Knesset for many years and a deputy minister. Then I moved to Israel's Media Watch, which is a monitor group of Israel's media, as you correctly stated. And I'm finishing now 17 years, going on retirement, at the Menachem Begin Heritage Center, which is parallel to what the Americans would call a presidential library for Israel's sixth prime minister, Menachem Begin.
And I want to tell you, this man can make chicken soup. He got, I think, the recipe from his mother or his grandmother. Every single Thursday when I call him for the broadcast that I do, Prophecy Today, across the entire United States and around the world on the internet, he's making chicken soup. So earlier today, he came over to find out where we actually were, where the studios were going to be, brought me some chicken soup, and just before we went on the air a few moments ago, Winky, that chicken soup is fantastic. I think we should start marketing it in the United States. Maurice, you come and tell us your background briefly. I know that you were many years in the Israeli Defense Force.
Yes, Jimmy. Hi, my name is Maurice Hirsch. I moved to Israel in 1996. A year later, I joined the IDF, the Israel Defense Force. I spent 19 years in the IDF in different positions in the legal division of the IDF. In my last position, I was head of the prosecution for Judea and Samaria, prosecuting the Palestinian terrorists.
And actually, that accent says that you're not from Jerusalem originally.
Absolutely not. I was actually born in South Africa and then moved to England and from England to Israel.
Wow. Well, it's great to have both of you here. Looking forward to the conversation we want to have together. I want to have four segments that deals with situations here in Israel that I believe the people in the United States need to understand. I want to talk about the two-state solution, talk about incitement and violence, the peace process, which would bring in, of course, the Jewish settlements and the Temple Mount itself. So let's get underway with our discussion. Let's talk about the two-state solution. And let me ask you, Maurice, if you will lead off, what about the Palestinians? Are they ready for a two-state solution? Are they just holding out and doing everything they can to try to act like they want it, but really don't want a two-state solution?
So really, Jimmy, the answer is exactly as you presented it. Confucius famously said that if you have a plan for a year, you plant rice field. If you want a plan for 10 years, you plant trees. And if you want a plan for 100 years, you educate. So the question is, how do the Palestinians educate their population? What do they teach them? And what we've seen from what they teach them is not consistent in any way, shape, or form with two states. Their education books provide maps that completely eradicate the state of Israel. It doesn't exist. What they do is that they teach their children and their population that one day they will return to their homeland in Jaffa, in Haifa, in Akko, and in all of the places that are now Israel. Returning to the occupied lands of 1948 is their goal. They say it clearly, but few people are willing to listen and really hear what they are saying themselves to their own people.
Well, that's, I thought from afar as an observer, what's going on was the exact evaluation that I would have made. Winky, the two-state solution, is it a viable option as far as the Jewish people are concerned?
Jimmy, pre-state Israel, the Zionist organization tried the two-state solution back in 1937 with something called the Peel Commission. Then in 1947, the UN partition plan, the Arabs rejected it. They went to war. They went to terror. We tried a disengagement program with the Gaza Strip in 2005. This two-state solution was even adapted by Prime Minister Netanyahu, who comes from the right wing of Israeli politics. It's been very impossible to get them to agree, even to negotiate on the basics of this. And I won't get into whether or not it is good for Israel from a security point of view, from an economic point of view, and other things which could be a little bit more partisan. I just want to keep the first part of my answer. They've rejected it consistently. Why would they accept it now?
Maurice, quick answer, if you will. The Hamas and the Fatah organizations, they're the two factions of the Palestinian body politic. I know Fatah is talking a good game. Hamas is saying, no way are we going to have a second state. Do you think the Palestinian people, because of your operation of monitoring their media, are ever going to come together for a two-state solution?
I don't think so. I don't think the Hamas and the Fatah can ever bridge the gaps between them. The real big question is, who is going to rule in Judea and Samaria? The understanding is, based on the elections in 2006, free elections that were held, the Hamas won. The Fatah then deposed them in Judea and Samaria. They retained their control in the Gaza Strip, but in Judea and Samaria, they will take the rule again, and it will be violent, and they will spare no means to take that control.
Winky, isn't the real problem, as far as the Palestinian people are concerned, is they're not willing to recognize the Jewish people have a right to a state here. Therefore, it's a one state, two state, it doesn't matter, either one.
Number one, you're correct, because the Jewish national identity does not exist by them. We are still some sort of religion or community. We are not a national group. And without that basic, which Mr. Netanyahu has been pleading with them, tell me that you're going to agree to the Jewish people has a right anywhere in the land of Israel, that is not on the table. The second aspect, of course, is that Palestine originally included something called Jordan. So in other words, the two-state solution is two states that are Arab states in the former Palestinian area, and only one small bit for Israel. I don't think that's a proportional resolution of the conflict that's been going on almost 100 years.
You know, when I'm talking with these two men, Winky Maddad, he's an Orthodox Jew, so is Maurice, and they both are observant Jews. That's what an Orthodox Jew would be. But Maurice is talking to us because of his knowledge of watching and prosecuting violence and incitement for many, many years as it relates to the Palestinian people. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, I want to move now into our second segment on the broadcast today, live from Jerusalem, Israel. I want to talk about that incitement, the violence that is taking place, and is there, in addition to Palestinian violence, is there Jewish violence as well? That's all ahead right here on Stand in the Gap Today.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Hi, everybody. Jimmy DeYoung. And can you believe we're in the city of Jerusalem, the eternal city? This is the city that the Messiah said He will come back and dwell among His people, the Jewish people, forever. Going to build a temple here. We're going to talk about that when we focus on the Temple Mount in just a moment. I have two broadcast partners joining me today. Remember, Sam, Gary, and Dave, they're away for today. They'll be back tomorrow. The first team will be back tomorrow. But the second team, we're trying to do as well as possible. We might be signed for a later opportunity someplace down the road. So we're trying to give you the greatest information we possibly can about some of the sticky wickets as it relates to some type of a coexistence between the Palestinians and the Israeli Jews here in Israel. Maurice, let's talk about incitement and violence. Do the Palestinian people, now you monitor the media, the print media, the electronic media, do the Palestinian people believe that violence is the only way they're going to be able to get what they want? But number two, do they use incitement in their media to try to accomplish that?
So I can't really talk very much about the Palestinian population and what they necessarily believe in. What I can give you, Jimmy, is a picture of what the leaders provide for their population. The leaders provide for their population constant incitement. The incitement starts with the glorification of terrorists who have committed terrorist attacks in the past. They're made to be seen as heroes. They're glorified in every way. They have streets named after them, plazas named after them. They have statues erected in their name. Thereafter, they see violence as a means that is always on the table, always. Whenever necessary, they turn to that path, and they prepare their people for it all the way along. You prepare your people by saying that becoming a martyr is the best thing that you can do. By becoming a martyr, you achieve the highest level of sanctity in Islam, and that's a good thing to do. When you see the figureheads that are glorified as heroes, these are terrorists. And so that is the message that they're providing. And when they see the need, they send the people out to commit terrorist attacks. We have people like Jibril Rajoub, who says to the population, he's the head of the Ministry of Sports, head of the Palestinian Football Association. He's really number three in the Fatah after Abbas. Marwan Barghouti is in prison, and he's number three. He's possibly the next leader of the Palestinian Authority. He says to his people like this: go and kill Jews, but do it cleverly. Don't blow up buses in Tel Aviv, because that distances the international community from us. Blow up Jews in Jerusalem or in the territories, because there no one really cares.
You know, Winky, I understand that you live in a place called Shiloh, which is in the center part of the state. It was a very, very important city in biblical times, great historical background dating back 3,500 years. But that is the area that's referred to as the Jewish communities, or as many people understand them, the Jewish settlements. You've seen a lot of violence out there. You're concerned about it as it relates to the Palestinian people right there at your location, your settlement. There's been some violence that's taken place, Palestinian-led violence right outside. But there are reports also of some of the Jewish young men getting involved in what they're saying would be Jewish violence. What do you know about that? And is this a concern as far as the Jewish people are concerned?
Well, Jimmy, with me, all violence is a concern. It's morally wrong. It's criminally wrong. And it doesn't really help because in this situation, Israel has always been willing to negotiate. When you have a dictatorial regime that refuses even to receive delegations or sign agreements or go to Washington, this is not the case with Israel. We've been open. I mentioned Menachem Begin, the autonomy plan, the Yigal Alon plan earlier on. We returned to Sinai. In other words, we have exhibited a willingness to compromise. Does this, the Arab terrorism, 8 people from the village of Shiloh, community of village of Shiloh, are victims of Arab terrorism. When our youngsters see this, some of them become unrestrained, despite the fact that educators try, we do not always succeed. I think it's very minor. It doesn't mean that it's not right, it's very wrong. But in terms of the proportion, if the Arabs can continue their terror and still demand diplomatic victories, from a moral point of view, of a political aspect, we're in very good company, not at all compared to them. So we should not be too much blamed for the rambunctiousness of the response of youth to the violence that they see.
Maurice, we talked about violence, but I know you monitor the Palestinian media. You and the team with Itamar Marcus and PALWatch.org is the address, of course, of the website and the location where you can actually be included in alerts that come out from the Palestinian Media Watch. How much of a usage of media is involved in this incitement? I know with the Oslo Accord, signed September the 13th, 1993, they really were not going to be allowed to have media, but all of a sudden, somehow they were able to finagle and get media. Is that media basically what is bringing about all of the violence that's being perpetrated upon the Jewish people by the Palestinians?
The media plays a tremendous part in the violence. We see it at all different levels. We see it at the youngest age possible, where we see on the media, excuse me, Jimmy, young children reciting over and over again poems of how Jews have horns and tails and they're the most evil of specimens on the earth. We see it at the next level up of the religious broadcasts. We see it at every level possible on the radio, on the television. They've even gone to the social media. The Fatah page, Facebook page, also has the incitement. Everywhere where you go, that's where you find the incitement. It's almost impossible to get away with it. The newspaper, you've got to remember, this is the Palestinian Authority. It's not America. You're not talking about a free press. You're talking about a press that's completely run by the Palestinian Authority, which conveys their messages. And their messages are incitement, glorification of terrorism, and preparing their population for the next stage of terrorism.
And even they use the children's media programs to try to educate the young children to be involved in violence, don't they?
Without question. They've shown twice in the last 4 years a cartoon program where the Jews are portrayed as Allah's enemy, as the friends and the really the empowerment, the embodiment of Satan on the earth, and that the religious commandment is for Allah's servants and Allah's believers to go out and kill the Jews.
I know that you were mayor of Shiloh for a number of years, Winky. As a political leader, as you are a political involved with the political arena for a number of years and the media itself, how do you bring about some type of a cessation of all of this violence? How can the state of Israel and the Jewish people deal with this type of violence and bring it under control?
Well, in the first instance, let me be a little bit pessimistic. As Morris has pointed out, and you too, Oslo Accords came into being over 20 years ago. In other words, a youngster from the age of 6, 7, 8 at that time, and he's now a young man, probably with children, has gone through an educational system, a media campaign. Morris pointed out schools, squares, streets, libraries are all named after these terrorists. We need probably another decade to detox, to turn back these people who are already in a second generation of incitement, of deeply held beliefs that have been propagated, which have nothing to do with peace. I don't even think they have a peace program which says, listen, one day we're going to sign an agreement, with a treaty with Jews, with the Israelis. This is what we're going to have to do. So I would think that the United States, and I understand that Mr. Trump, the president himself, had a little bit of a, I'm not going to say a shouting match, but a little bit of raising of voices with Mahmoud Abbas, the president, saying that, but you do sponsor terrorism. You pay them, not only incite them. Terrorists get salaries in prison according to how many Jews they killed or how many stones they threw. And so this is a very difficult situation if you're looking for coexistence and eventually peace.
Talk to me about, and both of you, give me about 15, 20 seconds, if you will. Maurice, you first. About the idea that the Israelis are really hardball players when it comes to trying to shut down violence and close out all incitement. Is the Israeli Defense Force, the police operations in Israel, are they being too tough on terrorists?
Absolutely not. I think there's so much more that can be done, mostly attacking the financial basis of the terrorism, entering into areas, which are under complete Palestinian control, is something which is very infrequent, and that's really the source of all of the venom that's coming out of the Palestinian Authority.
What do you think, Winky? Is the Israeli Defense Force, the border police, are they too tough on the Palestinians, and does that excite more violence?
Jimmy, thousands of Arab residents of the Palestinian Authority come across the lines. They start 3 o'clock in the morning, and they come over because they want to work, and they come in, and they come into Jerusalem. It's an open city, and they're here. We do not suppress them. We only watch out for the security of people who are going to get knifed or have stones thrown at them or something even worse, the car rammings of a year ago or so, which were horrendous. They have to be on watch. It's coming to American cities in certain places. We see more and more military or armed police at train stations, bus stops in Central South. This is the reality.
That is reality here, not only in the city of Jerusalem, but across the entire Jewish state of Israel. Well, incitement and violence makes it very difficult to go to the negotiating table and bring about some type of a peace process that will come to a culmination with an agreement between the two parties and bring about coexistence here. We're going to look at that in the next segment. Take a break first. We'll come back here on Stand in the Gap today. We'll talk about the peace process. Our president thinks he can do something with it. We'll see if that's the case in just a moment on Stand in the Gap today.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap today.
We've been talking about the two-state solution with our two special guests, Maurice Hirsch and Winky Madad. Maurice is associated with the PalestWatch.org, Palestinian Media Watch. They're watching what the Palestinian people are really saying, not just to the world, but to their own people. Winky Madad lives in the Jewish settlements. In fact, so does Maurice. And this is key. We're going to ask how that fits in to the peace process in just a moment. But it's interesting, Winky, that the President of the United States, during his campaigning, said that he was a deal maker. He likes to make deals. He wrote a book about how to be a deal maker. And he said, the deal I'm looking forward to being able to make is to bring the Israelis and the Palestinians together in a peace process. Now, just recently, he was here in Jerusalem. He went over to Bethlehem, as you just alluded to meet with Mahmoud Abbas, who is the president of the Palestinian Authority. In your opinion, is it going to be possible for a peace process to get out of the deep freeze and get back in motion and move towards a capability of a coexistence here between the two peoples?
Jimmy, you always got to believe that it's possible. However, we know that Mr. Greenblatt, one of the negotiators, has been here twice, and Jared Kushner came over last week. Both of them, I don't think, had very positive experiences dealing with Mahmoud Abbas, especially making some very elementary demands, subjects we've been talking, Maurice and I, here, in terms of incitement, in terms of anti-Israel incitement by the Palestinian Authority, about paying off the terrorists as part of their prison term. If these issues, they're not going to back down on. if they're not going to come be forthcoming in terms of something I mentioned before, the recognition that, yes, Jews do have a national identity and national rights, we're not going to go anywhere. I think for too long, too many American presidents, and especially the past one, Mr. Obama, have been very soft, very encouraging, very declaring that Palestinian state is the goal. They're just sitting back and letting America do the work for them. The moratorium of Netanyahu a couple of years ago, nothing really has helped. Based on that record, I'm not very optimistic, though.
I know just before you came over to join us on this radio broadcast back to the United States, you met with the United States ambassador to Israel. Did he have anything to say? Maybe a late breaking news that we can break right here on the broadcast. Did he have anything to say about the peace process?
Not yet. He was asked in sort of small talk conversation, and he said, people in the know shouldn't talk. Unfortunately, those who don't know do the talking. So he did not want to be forthcoming. He indicated that something is going on, whether it means that they're reconsidering, they're jumping into the situation as they've done in the first 2 or 3 months now, or they're taking stock. The problem is, I think one of the things we've discussed previously in another opportunity, is that there's very little backing within the State Department, the professionals, for Mr. Trump's policies and reorientation of what exactly the peace and how negotiations go. If he doesn't have the backup from the State Department officials, the American consulate, I'm not going to say he's going to be sabotaged, but he might find it very difficult to move things along.
Do you wonder, do the Israeli leaders wonder, who is setting Middle East peace policy for the Trump administration? Is it the president or, as you said, the man who's in charge of the State Department, Secretary Tillerson?
It has to be the president. If he wants to be the president, he has to be the president. There might be some pushback. He's going to have to roll over these people. And I'll give you just one small example. We have an American consulate in Jerusalem, which has a Facebook page, which is only in English and Arabic, even though over 500,000 people or more, I would say even, excuse me, close to 1 million people, use Hebrew. So to whom is this American consulate turning? The Palestinians only, or to the residents within a certain territory in which they supervise? The Americans have to take stock of what they've done, how they've invested, what their security concerns for America and for Israel, and then recalibrate the peace process.
Maurice, I've heard it said that the Palestinians never miss a chance to miss a chance to do something. In other words, they've had opportunities. In fact, when Ehud Barak was the prime minister, he met in Washington area, I believe it was the Y conference, and he offered almost everything that you could offer to the Palestinian people. Do they really want a peace process? Or are they just dilly-dallying and along, keeping the Israelis at arm's length, not ready to recognize the Jews have a right to have a state? Do they really want peace or not?
Absolutely not. I don't think so. What they're telling the rest of the world, and they're fantastic at that doublespeak, they're telling the rest of the world that the conflict here is really about land. Give us enough land and there'll be peace. Really what they're telling their population is back to the religious argument, back to adopting the Hamas position, that this is a religious war between Allah and evil, between good and bad. Allah is the Palestinian people, bad is the and evil of the Jews. That's the only way it can work. It's a religious war. We would only hope now that it was about land, but it's not about land. That's not what they're telling their people. We have to listen to what they're saying to their own people. The land for peace deal is gone, finished. They are the ones who threw it out with every possible opportunity, because that's what they believe, not missing an opportunity. They simply believe that. We just have to understand that they believe that, and there's no way we can appease them.
Let me remind everybody that Maurice Hirsch is not Palestinian. He happens to be an Orthodox Jew coming out of South Africa, then into England before he immigrated to the land. But he is a monitor of what all the Palestinian media is saying about the subjects we're discussing today. That's how he comes to the table with this type of information. Now, we mentioned two factions in the Palestinian body politic. Fatah, which would be Mahmoud Abbas, president of the Palestinian Authority, which is their legislative body, and Hamas, and they're the terrorist organization declared so basically by the world, located in the Gaza Strip. I understand Hamas does not ever even want to talk about a Jewish state and a coexistence and any type of a peace process. Is that basically the case? And is that going to stop Fatah of trying to come together with the Jewish people?
Hamas is an Islamic fanatical organization. They do not believe in any type of peace process. They do not believe in any right of the Jews to exist in the land of Israel. That isn't on their menu in any way, shape, or form. And let's just remember, Jimmy, when they held free elections in the Palestinian Authority, it was the Hamas who won the elections also in Judea and Samaria in 2006.
So that should tell the story right there. Let me talk about the settlements. Both of you live in Jewish settlements or Jewish communities. That term is interchangeable. I know that those living in what we refer to as the settlements like to be called people living in communities, Jewish communities, which they are in Judea and Samaria, over 200 of them, somewhere in the area of almost 800,000 Jews living out there. What part does this settlement situation play in the peace process, Winky? I mean, is that hindering peace or what?
That is basically, Jimmy, the essence of peace, because if there's no peace between people, then there's not going to be peace. There are Arabs, almost 20% of the population of Israel within the 67 borders, right, are Arab. Do we kick them out, just like they would perhaps wish to dismantle our communities and take us out? We have no right to live there. Do we have to empty out Israel, as I said? The situation is we do not want to deny Arabs any individual and civil rights that they deserve and have. We are questioning about the ability to run a parliament, to run a democracy, even for themselves. Their own citizens, if I can use that term, do not gain anything from the Palestinian Authority in terms of transparency of government, human rights, and other elements. If they cannot do that to their own people, they're not going to be able to do it to us, whether we're inside the Palestinian Authority territory in a future state, perhaps, if it happens, or within the state of Israel. If there's no coexistence, if they don't want to hook up environment and water cleaning plants and stuff like that, there's no confidence. There's nothing to build on. There's no trust. That situation is not good for peace.
Just give me a quick answer, if you will. Is there any Israeli leader that would be willing to withdraw all the Jewish settlers, all of those Jewish communities evacuated so that there could be peace?
There is no Jewish leader, whether it's on the left or the right of the main mainstream parties. All of them, at one point or another, want to keep something. It's called the settlement blocks, whether it's Gush Etzion area where Morris lives in, or other areas close to the cities of Ra'anana, Petah Tikva on Israel's eastern border, so that this situation is not acceptable to the Arabs. It doesn't make a difference who's talking, Netanyahu, Tzipi Livni, Yitzhak Herzog.
That's a very interesting statement just made. Peace is going to be very difficult. Well, we're going to have to take another break right here. Our last segment is going to cover the Temple Mount, the most sacred piece of real estate in all of Judaism. You do not want to miss that. It's all ahead right here on Stand in the Gap Today.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teacher's editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Thank you very much, Jimmy DeYoung. I'm seated in the city of Jerusalem. The Bible says in Ezekiel chapter 5 and verse 5, Jerusalem was placed by God in the center of the earth, and then He placed all the other nations around her. Well, in the center of Jerusalem, you have the Old City. In the center of the Old City, you have the Temple Mount. And the center of that, there's a gold dome building there that has replaced the Jewish temple, which is going to stand there, according to that same prophet Ezekiel we were talking about just a moment ago. There will be a temple up there. But until that time, the book of Zechariah, chapter 12 and verse 2 says, Jerusalem is going to be the center of controversy. Winky, Jerusalem, the Temple Mount itself, the most sacred piece of real estate in all of creation, as far as the Jews are concerned. I mean, this is very special. I know you've been involved with those people making preparations to build the next temple. I know you have a great interest in the Temple Mount. I was up there today. I took my tour group up. I did a television shoot up there for a special video we've got coming up. But this is just I'm not Jewish. I'm Christian. But I was excited. As a famous radio or television talk show host said, my leg was tingling when I was up there on the Temple Mount. Chris Matthews made a statement, by the way. What do you think about the Temple Mount?
Jimmy, it's, as you said, it's the most sacred territory for Jews. It's where the two temples were, where we believe in the future redemption there'll be a third temple. At the very minimum, we should be able to honor and respect the place. There is, yes, argument within the rabbinical establishment whether one can enter or not. How much can you enter? But the former chief rabbi, Shlomo Goren, and other important rabbis have permitted entrance, limited, shall I could say, to certain areas which are outside the main former buildings that were inside the Temple Mount. It also would be a sign of acceptance. If people of two different religions can pray in proximity to one another, to the same God, basically, in essence, wouldn't that be peace? Wouldn't it be understanding? Wouldn't it be coexistence? To deny us that right, to say the temple never existed, for example, as sometimes they say in the Palestinian Authority, that again beats back peace, denies the possibility of coexistence, and really is very morally wrong.
Do the Palestinian people, Maurice, really have to do away with the Bible, the Word of God, do away with secular history, do away with their own history, that there was ever a Jewish temple on the Temple Mount to claim they have the total control and right to the Temple Mount? And why do they think this? What's their thinking about the Temple Mount?
So what you've got to understand is that on the Temple Mount, it's a tremendously large area. What you can see today of the Western Wall is just 60 meters of a 480-meter wall and some 150 meters on the southern side. That's the size of the Temple Mount itself. But what the Palestinians generally talk about when they're talking about the Temple Mount is the Al-Aqsa Mosque. That's really the holy site. The Golden Dome isn't really the holy site for them. It's the mosque itself. But what you see in the Palestinian Authority, a developing narrative, It started off with just the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's now become the whole of the Temple Mount. When just a week ago, Jibril Rajoub, one of the Palestinian leaders, even gave the idea that there will be some type of Jewish sovereignty over the Western Wall, which is outside of the Temple Mount, he was jumped on immediately and was and really felt the need to recant any statement that he'd made and to deny that it ever said that there'd be Jewish sovereignty. When you connect that to the next thing, where every time there's a fall in the leadership in the polls for the leadership of the leaders of the Palestinian Authority, it's an immediate war cry. The Jews want to destroy the Temple Mount. The Jews want to undermine the Al-Aqsa Mosque. That's their war cry. That is the way they rally the troops. That's the way they incite to get everyone going. When they know, really, there's nothing that's really going on. Jews barely go up onto the Temple Mount. Their limited access is something which is famous, unfortunately. But that's their war cry. The war cry is the Temple Mount is the source of all evil, and we must gather around to destroy those evil people who are attacking the Temple Mount.
Winky, what about the fact that the Palestinian people say that they have a right to have a state called Palestine, and they have a right to have a capital city called Jerusalem? They at least are now being a bit lenient, and they say, give us the old city and we'll accept that. But if they give the old city to the Palestinian people, that would mean giving away the Temple Mount. Will the Israeli leadership ever give up the Temple Mount as you see the future unfolding?
Jimmy, 50 years ago, Israel's Knesset passed a law that extended Israel's sovereignty to major portions of the Jerusalem municipality that used to be under Jordanian rule. And don't forget, Jordan occupied Jerusalem as well as Judea and Samaria, what's known as the West Bank. The situation is that no Israeli leader on left or right, and I'm talking about the mainstream, not talking about the extremists on the left, we do have some minor small parties, including even a communist party, think that we're ever going to give up the sovereignty of Jerusalem. It will not become divided. All they're talking about is some sort of administrative relationship that would give them something in Abu Dis, which is just on the eastern border, and all sorts of things like that. It's not going to happen. Poll after poll of the Israeli population has agreed to that. It's something that the Americans can solve by moving the embassy to Jerusalem.
Maurice?
Jimmy, I just wanted to point out one thing. It's not necessarily anything to do with Palestinian Media Watch, but if you look at the 1922 census, the British census in Palestine, you will find already then in 1922, Jews were the outright majority in Jerusalem. So when you're talking about Jerusalem being the capital city of the Jewish people, it's been that way for It was that way for hundreds of years in history, in biblical times, and also for the last 100 years, that's been the case. The new claim of the Palestinians that this is our capital city is something which doesn't really have any type of base in any type of historical fact, far or near.
You know what's exciting to me? I read the Jewish prophets, the ancient Jewish prophets. Ezekiel says that there's going to be a temple on the Temple Mount that's going to be built where the Messiah will rule and reign forever. That's Zechariah chapter 6 and verse 13. And in Ezekiel, there's six chapters, 202 verses about that next temple coming up. I know, Winky, there's preparations to build that temple. We've only got about 30 seconds, but there is going to be ultimately, according to God's word, a temple up there on the sacred piece of real estate that God has given the Jewish people.
Observant Orthodox Jews every year, every day mention that element about rebuilding Jerusalem several times in various prayers. We don't know exactly how it's going to happen or when, but we have to be prepared because that it will be. Hopefully it will be a location that will bring all the peoples of the world together as Isaiah prophesied many, many years ago.
Amen and amen. Well, thank you both, Maurice, and also Winky Madad, Maurice Hirsch, joining us to talk about some very hot-button issues here on Stand in the Gap today, two-state solution, incitement and violence, the peace process, and the Temple Mount. Remember, Sam, Gary, and Dave will be back tomorrow. I'm Jimmy DeYoung reporting from Jerusalem, and thank you for listening to Stand in the Gap today.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler, brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.americanpastorsnetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.